You're listening to the Vibrant Happy Women Podcast, episode number 149. We're talking about discovering the magic of your most authentic self. Stay tuned. Hi, I'm Dr. Jen Ridey, former burned out mom of six turned happiness whisperer. And I'm here to help you get off that hamster wheel and make time for yourself without the guilt, so you can live a balanced, calm, heart-centered life. With over 2.5 million downloads, this is the Vibrant Happy Women Podcast. Welcome back to Vibrant Happy Women, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. I'm honored that you would spend some time with me today. And you're going to love my guest, Sarah Jenks, who has the most juicy and amazing story of discovering, unlocking her most authentic self. Sarah was a busy, stressed out mom with a husband in medical school doing his residency, and she was paying everything for their family financially, handling everyone's needs until she burned out. And she began a whole new, beautiful, amazing path toward her authentic self. And through this interview, you get to hear how she did it and learn about the emotions of eating, how that often when we're holding on to that extra weight, it's because we're deeply unhappy. And that is part of Sarah's story. She had to learn how to receive that happiness from connecting with her husband rather than a piece of candy, or from treating her stress with therapy instead of with cookies, or from filling her bowl of happiness with a dance class instead of with ice cream. We can create so much more of our happiness. But not only that, Sarah's pursuit of happiness, her pursuit of happiness led her down the most miraculous path of finding this amazing property and working with women in one of the most beautiful ways I have heard of to date. So there is so much in this interview. You're going to love it. It's a long one and it's beautiful. It's a don't miss interview for sure. So without further ado, let's go ahead and dive right in. I'm with Sarah Jenks today, and she's a mom of three rambunctious small humans, a life coach, and an emotional eating expert. Between her online programs and retreat center in Medfield, Massachusetts, Sarah holds sacred space to empower women and support them in finding their magic and rediscovering their most authentic selves. Sarah, I have been following you online for a long time now, ever since I met one of your friends, Kate Northrup, and... Aww. I am super excited that we get to talk today. Welcome to Vibrant Happy Women.
Aw, thanks, Jen, for having me. I'm so excited to be here with you. I know we're going to have a really great conversation.
I know it too, for sure. Well, let's dive in with one of your favorite quotes and then hear your story of, you know, being a mom of three and running a business. That's amazing. But let's start with your quote.
Great. So my quote is, this is from Nikita Gill. And she says, "Some days I am more wolf than woman. Ooh. And I'm still learning how to stop apologizing for my wild."
Oh, that's brilliant. Where did you come across that?
Oh, she's brilliant. You know, it was like the beauty of Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, we can talk about Instagram if you want to, but yeah, there's so much that's hard about it. And there is also so much beauty. And I found Nikita on Instagram, and she's a prolific poet and writer, and she has this book, Fierce Fairy Tales, that I highly recommend every woman reads, because she speaks through, you know, archetypal fairy tales, but rewrites them with, you know, and embeds the information we need to be strong in this day and age.
Mm. I love that word, fierce, fiercely feminine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Sarah, tell us your story. And I'm particularly interested in, you know, I followed your emails when you decided to, you know, visualize and manifest the yurt. That's so fascinating.
Yeah. So you've been around for a while.
That's awesome. I have.
Okay. So I'll give like a little bit of a backstory. So I came into this work around emotional eating and empowering women because I really struggled with my weight. And I grew up believing, like so many women do, that we have to be thin in order to be happy. And I spent my whole life trying to lose 20 pounds so that I could have my best, most amazing life that I thought was just waiting on the other side of this weight loss. But I could never stick to a diet. So I thought that, you know, I had no willpower, things were wrong with me, and my best life was just 20 pounds away. Why couldn't I do it? All this stuff. And I realized that my life didn't suck because I wasn't thin. My life sucked because my life sucked. And I wasn't doing anything about it because mm-hmm. I was waiting. I was waiting for my life to begin when I was thin. Mm-hmm. So I stopped waiting. I actually looked at why I was unhappy. And I made all of these great changes. And so, of course, I was filling my happiness bowl with dance classes instead of ice cream. And I was treating my stress with therapy instead of cookies. And I was getting love from my husband instead of candy. And I really looked at where I could derive actual emotional medicine instead of getting all this emotional medicine through food that wasn't working and also making me really sick. So once I sort of got that mostly figured out, I'd say mostly because, you know, none of us are actual experts before we start things, and I don't think we're supposed to, but I developed a program called Live More, Weigh Less that I started. I actually, for some reason, I thought it was 2009, but I just realized last night it was 2008 because I was doing that 10-year challenge thing that's been going around on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
So it's been 10 years, and I was really grounded in emotional eating for many years, you know, 7 years. And I started seeing this therapist in 2012. And it turned out, just randomly, I didn't know this, that my therapist was a priestess in the 13 Moon Mystery School. And one time I came over to her house for therapy, and there was sort of remnants of ceremony the night before. So the entire room was draped in purple velvet. There were, you know, the incense was burned down. The candles were, you know, just stubs on the floor. There was wax everywhere. Everything smelled of Palo Santo. And it was just, I remember walking in and having this full body response. But even though my brain couldn't figure out what was going on, and I just looked at her and I said, "What happened here last night?" And she looked at me and she goes, "Oh, well," she's British. She's like, "Oh, well, I can see that you're interested in this. It's nothing. We'll talk about it when you're ready. It's nothing." Like, I want in on this, in this special club. And, you know, we went on and on. She started sort of bringing more divine feminine principles into our therapy. And I had done meditation work. I had done Buddhist work. But a lot of that stuff still didn't bring in the divine feminine. And I was so drawn to it. So I started, and basically I stayed in the closet. I was doing all this spiritual work and I didn't want to tell anybody because I thought that I would be seen as such a weirdo. And I created this whole brand around being this like approachable, totally normal, all American girl next door who just happened to talk about emotional eating and sex a lot and all this stuff. And behind the scenes, I'm doing like deep temple work. And I sort of felt like I had these, like the internet life and my life behind the scenes. And it got pretty painful. So what started happening was, and this is my low point, I had my son Marshall, and I was so deeply unhappy after having him. I think it was a combination of, you know, a pretty traumatic birth, hormonal stuff, and absolutely no support because I didn't know that I needed support. I was in this place where I thought that I should figure out how to do it on my own, and I needed to pay attention to my intuition around motherhood, and I needed to create my own patterns with him, and I was strong and I could just do it by myself. And my husband was in a surgical residency at the time, and we were living in San Francisco, and my whole family is on the East Coast, and his family was in Colorado and Seattle, so we had no support. And I was really depressed. And so I just threw myself into work, and I threw myself back into this whole like brand of the cool girl next door again while I'm doing all this ceremony. Oh my God. And so then when Marshall was 9 months old, I got pregnant again. And
oh my goodness.
It was so hard. And I, you know, Jonathan's working 90 hours a week, and I'm now needing to support our whole family, because Jonathan isn't making any money in residency. He's making less than our nanny. So I'm needing to pay for a nanny full time, which in San Francisco was $27 an hour. Oof. And our 3-bedroom apartment because we were having another baby. And also I like nice things. So I will say I wasn't forced to move. We would have been fine in a studio. We could have survived, but that was maybe not the best decision I ever made. But anyways, neither here nor there at this point. So we decided to get this big, you know, beautiful apartment, and life got really expensive. And I got really tired because I was pregnant with a 1-year-old. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up hiring, and I was deeply committed to being famous at this point.
Oh, wow. Okay. I can't imagine. That's so not your vibe. Yeah.
So not my vibe. I hired a really expensive publicist. You know, I was talking to publishers, like big publishers, about book deals. I was going to New York every 3 months to talk to magazine editors, spending all this money on publicity and just really going for it. At the same time, I'm having a complete mental breakdown. And at the end of my pregnancy with Annabelle, my blood pressure started getting so high. Mm-hmm. And it was absolutely because I was so stressed about money. I was on this path that I was not meant to be on. And I was so unhappy. So what I basically had to do was I canceled all my meetings with the publishers that I remember I was supposed to go back to New York this one time. I canceled everything. I told all these potential publishers that I wasn't going to write a book right now. And also, at this point, I'm like 37 weeks pregnant. I was so confused and in the dark about everything. So I basically tune everything out, and I have a beautiful birth with Annabelle. And even though I had to get induced, I wanted to have a home birth. And I was so sad because I had created this environment in my body that wasn't safe for a baby, you know, all because I was so out of alignment and so stressed out. So coming to terms with that was so hard. And then I think it was when Annabelle was maybe 2 months old, I let everybody go. I canceled my relationship with my publicist. I let go of this huge, huge team that I had. And I brought my business down to practically nothing. And then I was basically left with no identity because I said, I can't do Live More or Less anymore. I've overdone it. It wasn't working anymore. You know, women stopped buying it. I wasn't going after the things I wanted to go after. So who am I? Mm-hmm. And I had another bout of postpartum depression. I got a little bit more support after Annabelle, but still not everything I needed. And I'm still now trying to support our family, which was so hard. And I had to figure everything out. So from there, I decided that I really needed to learn who I was, and I needed to really pay attention to this priestess work that I was doing. So I dove deeper into that. I worked with an amazing therapist, this woman who is the empowerer of empowerers. She's like an empowerment coach. Mm. And we did deep spiritual work together. Her name is Katina Mercadante. She's amazing. We did deep spiritual work together. And it was with her that she helped me see that my true core virtue is really around, you know, just being in the magic of being alive and the magic of the earth and the magic of the stars and of the moon, and understanding how we all have our own unique magic and our unique connection to this web of life that we're in. And, you know, we can see in layman's terms, this is like the synchronicities and the coincidences. And when we think about someone and then they show up at the grocery store, you know, those sorts of things, we can so often brush aside as just like a weird coincidence. Mm-hmm. But then when we start to sort of understand how everything's connected, you just can't make this shit up. So here's when my big magic happened. So I'm working with Katina. I come to understand who I really am. And I do this 5-year, huge 15-page. And through this writing process, I understand that what I'm meant to do is have this huge space where I can gather women in big circles outside. We can gather in the woods together and learn about the moon. I want to have enough space to build a yurt. I wanted to live on this property with my family. I want to have a body of water. I wanted it to be in this certain area of the country outside of Boston so I could be near my family. I also felt really called to bring the divine feminine to New England, because living in San Francisco, it's like, you know, everyone and their mother sort of gets that language, but in New England, not so much. It's still seen a little bit weird. People don't really get that witches are just a feminist term for women who are connected to the earth and not this whole patriarchal brainwashing fictitious character that we've all been sold, you know, since we were born. But I wrote out this whole long thing. I said, in 5 years, this is what I want, and in so much detail. So 2 weeks later, Jonathan and I are on Trulia, just that like real estate app, and we forget to put our budget in the search box. And this house comes up, and it's sort of this like funky looking 70s chalet on a lake. And anytime there's a lake, I click on it, and I'm clicking through the pictures. And I kid you not, it's like in order of what I wrote. And so it's like windy driveway with trees, big open fields, 10 acres of forest. You know, it's showing pictures of the house. It has exactly the amount of space we need. And then there's this round yurt-like building, but 10 times better on the property. Hmm. And I'm just losing my mind because there aren't yurts in New England.
Right.
It's just not like a thing that they have. And this is so way better. It's an actual building. It's octagonal. So beautiful. So I'm freaking out. It's way above our price range and our budget, I should say, that we were planning on spending at the time. I go to sleep. I wake up the next morning and I just ask, what do I do? What am I supposed to do about this house? And I just hear, Google it. I'm like, okay, well, that's a weird direction from source, but okay. And so I Googled it. And because I found the name, they called it Harmony Farm. And so I Googled Harmony Farm, and there's this beautiful blog, and I'm reading this blog post. It's so beautifully written. And I get to the bottom, and it says, you know, it's signed by Dr. Leslie Shore and a picture of her. And she was my high school therapist.
No, that's insane.
Insane. So I grew up 15 minutes from the house, and my mom found Leslie through the minister of my church, and I came here for therapy to help me with my body image issues in high school.
Wow.
She was the first person to basically say that being overweight was not the problem. She's like, you're stressed out and unhappy. She's like, let's talk about the unhappiness and how are things going with your family and how are things going at school? And I was like, what? You know, I literally thought everything was wrong because of my weight. And she's like, you're not overweight. And she blew my mind. So I just sent her an email and I said, I don't know what's happening, but I see the house. I see how special it is and I want to come visit. And so I came to visit and we walked around the property. She took me up to this sacred space on the land. We're crying through the whole thing.
Really?
It was just so obvious it was meant to happen. It was
really?
So beautiful. Yes.
Oh my goodness.
It was crazy. But then here's what happened. I leave and I go into like magic amnesia. And I'm like, that wasn't real. That's just a weird coincidence. We can't afford that house. You know, my parents are telling me it's a really bad idea. My grandmother is calling me, who's a real estate agent, telling me it's a bad idea. It's too expensive. It's not in a neighborhood. Our kids are going to be miserable. It's too much work. I mean, all this fear. Mm-hmm. And I believe them. Mm-hmm. I totally believe them. And I went back to my friends and I said, because they're, you know, they've been with me through this whole thing. And I said, I don't think it's a thing, you know, blah, 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 blah. And my friends, thank God, said, Sarah, no, this is your house. This was huge magic. You wrote about this house and it came true. I know it feels scary, but you have to figure it out. And then I had to really up my spiritual practice. I had to sit for 45 minutes every morning at my altar and just listen. What is real? What is true? What do you want me to do? And when I was so deeply connected with my soul, I really heard that this had to happen, that this was my path.
Wow.
And I had to go against my parents. I had to go against my grandparents. I had to go against, you know, people who really loved me. And I had to say, actually, I know myself more. Mm-hmm. I need to live for me. I can't live for you anymore. Mm,
yes. That's empowerment. You know? That's empowerment totally. Right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was a huge moment of individuation for me, and that I had to listen to my soul first, and I had to learn how to make that voice louder. and we've been here for a year and a half now, and it's been amazing. It's been so amazing. I had my third baby here, and it was a beautiful birth. I had her at home. My husband has a great job, finally, because he was in training for 11 years.
Ooh,
so
wow.
I was supporting us for 11 years, and only five of which were with children. But anyways, it's been beautiful. And I've always had a great relationship with my parents. It's not like we have a bad one, and they've said to me, they're like, we were wrong. We were so wrong.
Really?
Yeah. And it's been so beautiful, the whole thing. And I'm so glad I listened, but mostly I'm so glad I had friends who could really see and stand up for my magic.
Yeah.
That's what's so important.
How did you make it happen? I mean, practically speaking.
Yeah. So practically speaking, I didn't pay my taxes in 2016.
Oh, there you go. So smart.
I made a lot of money. I owed the government a lot of money. And I decided to, instead of paying them the thousands and thousands of dollars that I owed them, that I went on a payment plan. And we used that money, plus a lot of money we had saved. I had a little money for my parents. So we just like gathered it all together and managed a down payment. And oh, this is the other thing. This is the most important thing. Because I knew the owner of the house and because I asked for what I wanted, we developed like a two-tier buyout where we bought most of the property a year and a half ago and we're leasing this like front field from them. That we'll buy in 3 years from now.
Oh, that's smart.
So it's basically, it's a two-part buy process.
Yeah.
And we're under contract and all the things. And so it meant that we could do it.
And really, nothing you did, it was out of the box, but nothing you did will hurt you long term. So instead of just thinking impossible, you got creative. I love that.
We got creative. Yeah. And it definitely, I mean, like the first 6 months we were here, it was a little dicey. You know, we really stretched ourselves. We drained every penny. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we kept enough money in case our roof collapsed, but we really had to rebuild. But we just had to, like, being here was our priority. And was it the safest, smartest thing to do? Like, not really. But, you know, we knew we want to be here for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
And properties like this don't come up all the time.
No way they don't. That's amazing.
Yeah. And we're 40 minutes from Boston. Mm-hmm. So we're not in the middle of nowhere. And we're in one of the best school systems in the state. And I've met such amazing people. Mm-hmm. It's just been awesome.
How was your husband when you said, we have to do this? What was his reaction?
Well, he's been with me long enough to know the difference between me getting excited about something and me tapping in to magic, mm-hmm. you know? And so he just looked at me and he said, oh, fuck, it's happening, isn't it? And I said, yeah, this is our house. It's happening. It's crazy. And he's like, oh, man, okay. And he just sort of like, he just got, you know, got on board. And, you know, we both waffled, but we waffled at different times. And it was really balanced so beautifully because during this whole process, he really got the importance of me doing magic. Mm-hmm. Because he knew that this house wouldn't have happened if I didn't call it in. Mm-hmm. And he knew it wasn't going to happen unless I was so holding space for the process, mm-hmm. you know, the whole time.
Yeah.
So, and he just knew he had to handled all the paperwork, all the finances, everything, which was really beautiful because I was the one making all the money. Mm-hmm. And so he really took on this thing and he really stepped into our financial relationship in a much deeper mm-hmm. way mm-hmm. while we were buying this house. And he really held the container, which yeah. is a deeply beautiful, sacred, masculine thing mm-hmm. to do. And he really said, like, you just sit there and do the magic and try not to freak out. And I will do the paperwork.
Aww.
And it was awesome. It was so good because I'm so good at sitting and doing the magic. And I'm so bad at the paperwork. And so it was beautiful. The whole thing was, it really up-leveled our relationship. Mm. To a completely new level.
So you guys share spiritual beliefs to some extent, or he trusts your ability to connect to the divine.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's in process as it can often be with women who are on a spiritual path with their partners who, especially male partners, I'll say, though it's not always the rule. But Jonathan was very religious growing up. He's Jewish, and he definitely can feel God. Like, he knows what that feels like. Mm-hmm. And he, so I knew it was in there, you know, and I could sense when we met, you know, he talked in a way that he was connected to something greater. Mm-hmm. But when you meet Jonathan, you wouldn't necessarily think, oh, he's just like a spiritual guy. Like, mm-hmm. he's not one of those guys.
Right.
You know, he's a scientist. He's a doctor. He's like really, you know, he thinks in a certain way, all that stuff. However, he trusts me and he respects me more than any other person on the planet. Mm. And so, you know, we just had the type of relationship where he's like, well, if Sarah's doing it, obviously it's something that's worthwhile.
Aww.
And so he has been doing the work to think about what is that for him? And we have an agreement in our relationship that we're both in alignment with who we are. Mm-hmm. And we come in and out of that. And we just really recommitted to that in the new year. But each of our, you know, we're so different. And so each of the way that we're in alignment is going to be different. But there's a frequency to being in alignment that we think is so important. And so he's in alignment his way. Mm-hmm. And I'm in alignment my way. And I think that usually when people are in alignment, we have some sort of spiritual awakening.
Mm, I love that.
And it's different for everybody. But for him, it's definitely starting to happen. It's just for him seeing his own greatness. Mm-hmm. And his own path and vision and expansion and potential. And just seeing that is a huge spiritual act.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So how does that look like in your home? Does he still practice Judaism when he connects with the divine? Does he use the word God? I noticed you use the word magic. Because I think there are a lot of families out there that might have unique words and terms, but really in the end, I think we're all connecting with the same thing.
I agree. I so agree that we're all connecting with the same thing. It has different faces. So, you know, he uses the word God. I feel like for me and my vernacular, I feel like there's male energy and a female energy. I call them God and goddess. Mm-hmm. And I love thinking about it as union, you know, and or great mother, great father. You can also talk about father, son, and mother, moon, you know, mother, earth. And so we use a lot of those different terms with the kids in the house. But we celebrate all the Jewish holidays. We celebrate all the Christian holidays. And we celebrate all the pagan holidays.
That's great. Wow. Yeah. How fun.
So there's a lot of celebrating. Yeah.
So many traditions. You're
so
probably
traditions.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
And it's so fun because I love ritual. And it's been so great for me to learn about Judaism because Judaism follows the moon calendar. Mm-hmm. And I follow the moon. So that's so beautiful, you know, when we have certain Jewish holidays on the new moon and it talks about new beginnings, you know, or mm-hmm. and when you're celebrating the pagan holidays, you can so clearly see how both Jewish and Christian celebrations came from the pagan holidays.
Well, tell us more about the pagan holidays for those that aren't aware of what they are.
Yeah. So the pagan holidays celebrate, people also call them the cross quarter holidays, and they celebrate the seasons.
Ah.
So you have sort of the main ones are winter solstice and summer solstice.
Okay.
So winter solstice being the shortest day of the year, summer solstice being the longest day of the year. And then you have spring equinox, which is right directly in the middle. The day is the same length as the night. So that's why it's called equinox, equal.
Yes.
And then there's the autumnal equinox, which is just the same on the opposite side. Mm-hmm. In some traditions, you know, the winter solstice is called Yule and the spring equinox is called Ostara, which is where we get the word Easter from.
Ah.
And the summer solstice, I'm blanking on the name right now. Why is that happening? It'll come to me. And the fall equinox is called Mabon. And then you have things like the cross quarter holidays. For instance, you have the Latine or Beltane, which is May Day, May 1st. Mm. And that's about fertility. And, you know, you can see how in spring, right around May 1st, that's when things start to sprout. Mm-hmm. And that's when things start to flower. And you have Imbolc in February, which is like, you know, middle of winter. And there's all of these stories around love. And that's where we get a lot of our stories around Valentine's Day.
Ah.
But I think the coolest thing to think about is Christmas and Yule and New Year's, because the original New Year was December 22nd, the day after the winter solstice, which is when the sun came back.
So oh, yeah.
Days getting shorter and shorter and shorter. And then right on December 22nd, the day is a little bit longer and then a little bit longer. And there's this new energy.
Yeah.
When you get more and more sunlight. So that used to be the new year. Mm-hmm. You know, during Yule, people would bring evergreens into their home to symbolize light. And they would decorate them with candles like we do with Christmas lights, because candles represent the light. And we bring candles and evergreens into our house to basically hold hope that the sun is going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these beautiful stories about the Oak King and the Holly King. And on winter solstice, there's this battle between the Oak King and the Holly King. And the Holly King, you know, wears a red furry outfit and a wreath of holly around his hair. And he rides in a sleigh pulled by 8 reindeer who represent the 8 cross-quarter pagan holidays.
Ah.
So you can see, right? So these stories and these symbols are not Christian.
Uh-huh.
You know, they were adopted when the Romans decided that everyone needed to be Christian in order to keep everyone in line. I'm a big Jesus fan, by the way. I will say that. Huge Jesus fan. But I think it's really important to understand the story. And so basically, you know, the Romans came in and they said, everyone needs to be Christian, but we'll keep some of your traditions so that it's an easy transition for you.
Wow.
And so it's so funny because, you know, people get like all up in my grill about celebrating the pagan holidays or talking about witchiness or witchcraft. And I'm like, you guys all have Christmas trees in your house. You can't have more pagan than that.
We're all celebrating them. Yeah.
We're all celebrating the holidays, whether we like it or not. And so you could see it as an erasure of certain traditions, or you could see it as these really rich traditions were just hiding until we were ready to celebrate them again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I feel we're doing. And my big mission is for women to understand our unique power. And when we understand about the cycle of the earth that we celebrate through these holidays and the cycle of the moon that reflects the seasons that I can get into in a little bit if you want me to.
Mm-hmm.
But Mother Earth, the moon is a feminine energy. You know, it's about mystery and dramatic change and all this stuff. And when we realize that the cycles of the moon and the seasons have the same exact energy as our menstrual cycle, we realize that, oh, this is part of me. What I'm seeing outside, this cycle of winter, spring, summer, fall, the cycle of the moon, you know, the dark moon, the waxing moon, the full moon, the waning moon, back to the dark moon. And I see this in my menstrual cycle. Oh, so there's this whole other way of being that is actually not happening in my daily life.
Hmm.
You know, and Kate Northrup talks about this. And so does Elisa Beattie and Dr. Northrup. And so many great people are bringing this wisdom back into our everyday life. But for me, I think it's so important for us to get that there's a feminine creation cycle of rest, growing, connection, and releasing. And when we can see how important that is to get that, we stop feeling so crazy.
Mm, yes.
Right. And we can start to, I know for me, it's like when the first time I celebrated the Latine, which is on May 1st. And what's really cool is that the symbol of May Day is the hawthorn tree. And I was getting all these messages about hawthorn trees. And I emailed, this is when we were in the process of buying this house. I emailed the previous owner and said, are there by any chance hawthorn trees on the property? She said, yes, I've actually planted 15 over the years.
Mm.
And so we named this land Hawthorn Farm.
Aww.
But I just remember the first time I celebrated that holiday and I did some of the rituals and I read about it, my cells started to sparkle. You just have this remembering of what life used to be like when we honored the earth. That's a feminine energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important for women. It's important for men. It's important for children. It's just like, it's so healing when we start to realize that there's this whole other wisdom that we can tap into.
Before we go further, give us an outline of what it means to be in your feminine energy versus the masculine. Just like a 101 course in a few minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. So to me, feminine energy is, it's cyclical. It's always changing. It's about understanding that rest is important and connection is important and letting things go is important. And there's a certain level of like mystery and ever changingness. You know, you think about the moon. Moon is always changing. It's rising and setting at a different time every day. It looks different every day. When we're outside under a full moon, we feel that mystery, where the sun basically rises and sets at the same time every day. It's stable. It gives, you know, sustenance. It is dependable. And you can also sort of think about David Deida, who's a really great teacher on masculine and feminine, will say like, New York is very masculine. It's fast. It's linear. It's a little bit rigid, but it's like go, 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 hardworking. And then Hawaii is a little bit more feminine. It's a little bit more wild and unpredictable and juicy. You can also think about our hormone cycle. So a man's hormone cycle is 24 hours and a woman's hormone cycle is 28 days.
Ah.
It's really different.
I didn't even know men had a 24-hour hormone cycle. What are they doing in that cycle?
They do. It's basically like the cycle of testosterone, where testosterone rises in the morning. They have a spike in the morning, which is why we have most of meetings in the morning. And it's when we're supposed to work out. And then, you know, and it starts over. And you can sort of see we're sort of supposed to show up at work as the same person every day.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're cycling as women and we're not on birth control, we're really different every single cycle because we have different hormones that are being released in our body. And what's so cool is that our hormones that are being released support us in being productive and creating and like basically being in a cycle of a work cycle. And this is something that Kate Northrup talks about, and I learned this from her, where if we come up with an idea while we're bleeding, our hormones actually connect our right and left hemisphere of our brains. And so we're the most intuitive. And we're also, our bodies are meant to rest, right? And so that's a perfect time to come up with an idea. And then in our follicular phase, our hormones are in such a way where we have a lot of energy. So we want to start a project. We have a lot of energy to dedicate to it. When we're ovulating, we're putting out all these pheromones. People want to connect with us. This is a great time to talk about what we're doing. And then we come into the luteal phase and where we're starting to shed our lining. And also our hormones are in such a way that we're really good at doing sort of the organizational work. And we sort of see this in the energy of early fall. You know, so you can overlay all these cycles. So you have this early fall energy of like back to school, squirrels gathering all the nuts for winter, harvesting all the plants, you know, getting ready and organized for the winter, the void, the time that we're bleeding, where we're going back into intuition. And you can overlay the moon onto this. So when you're manifesting with the moon, which is something that I do, we're setting intentions, you know, at the very newest, most tiny sliver of the new moon. And it's growing like spring or like your follicular phase. Under the full moon, we gather, we share our magic, we do magic together. And then during the waning moon, we start letting things go and releasing things to come back into just that quintessentialized intention. And then we do it all over again. So that what can often happen, just like with a workout plan, you know, we'll get this burst of energy when we're done bleeding. We're like, I'm going to run a marathon. And we sign up for a marathon and we train for 2 weeks and it's all going great. And then all of a sudden we don't want to run anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, oh, I can never stick to anything. I can't believe I have no willpower. I'm such a bad runner. I'm never going to do the marathon. Like, what's wrong with me? It's like, nothing. You're just in a new hormonal phase. Just like wait 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, but we're not educated in this. And, you know, I really believe, and I have a lot of good company in this, is that we're deliberately not educated in this so that women feel crazy and broken all the time, so that we don't rise to power and so that we're pliable. And so I talk a lot about this in my membership program, which is called Whole Woman. We talk a lot about patriarchal brainwashing and all of the stories we've been told about witches, not told about the seasons, not told about our bodies, not educated about the moon, so that we are constantly feeling crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And if we feel crazy and we feel broken, then we're not going to find our confidence and find our power and our center and rise up and shake things up around here.
If you care about the ingredients in the food you eat or the beauty products you use, why shouldn't the same be true of our feminine care products? This is what the female founders of Lola asked themselves. The idea that women shouldn't have to compromise when it comes to feminine care products drove them to create their company, which makes 100% natural, hypoallergenic, and gynecologist-approved feminine care products. Did you know the FDA doesn't require brands to disclose a comprehensive list of ingredients in their feminine care products? So most of them don't. Lola offers complete transparency about the ingredients found in their tampons, pads, liners, and wipes. Lola products are 100% organic cotton with no added chemicals, fragrances, synthetics, or dyes. You gotta feel good about that. Plus, Lola makes your month a little bit easier with their fully customizable subscription. You can choose your mix of products, mix of absorbency, number of boxes, and frequency of delivery. And Lola's subscription is super flexible. You can change, skip, or cancel your subscription at any time. I love how the Lola products come right to your door. You can get a blend of tampons and pads, and they're all 100% organic and chemical free. And good news, Lola is offering listeners of Vibrant Happy Women 40% off all subscriptions. Just visit mylola.com and enter promo code HAPPYWOMEN when you subscribe. That's MYLOLA, mylola.com, and enter promo code HAPPYWOMEN for 40% off all subscriptions. So let's say someone has a business or they're a stay-at-home mom. How would you live your life following these cycles? How would you think about it? I mean, first off, do people really, do their cycles match up to the moon? I mean, most of us don't. How do we solve that first dilemma? Or yeah, does yeah. it matter? Yeah.
I don't think it matters. Well, if you turn off your cell phone and don't watch TV when the sun goes down, you will probably sync a moon and go out and look at it. So I did this a couple of years ago, right at the end of my time in San Francisco. And then I got pregnant. So I haven't had a period for about a year and a half now.
Okay.
But what's so cool, so there's a couple things. So you can sync up with the moon, though it is not necessary. The way I like to think about it is we're affected by both. We're affected by our bodies and we're affected by the moon. Now that I'm not cycling right now because I was pregnant and now I'm nursing, I feel the moon so strongly. Mm. And it's been such a gift to me to really feel the moon in absence of my cycle. Because obviously when you have the moon in your body, you're going to feel that a little bit more than the moon in the sky. But I like to think that there's some alchemy between the two, but like also there's alchemy with our own astrology chart and all the stars in the sky and everything, you know. Mm-hmm. But I know for me, when I am cycling, I follow Kate's philosophy where, especially with work and projects I'm doing, I really follow my menstrual cycle. But when I'm manifesting something and I'm really doing magic, I like to follow the moon.
Ah.
That's my own thing that I do. So if I'm wanting to, let's say, like right now, I'm really working on having a better relationship with movement in my body and figuring out how do I work out a little bit better and what's new for me now that I'm done having children. I set an intention on the new moon and I'm checking in on the full moon and on the quarter moons and, you know, really asking for support to a higher power that's outside of me mm-hmm. or inside of me, you know, depending on how you think about it. It's both. but if I were cycling, I would probably set that intention on the new moon, but I would know that I would be in touch with, okay, so during this part of my cycle, I'm going to want to be doing more cardio. This part of my cycle, I'm going to be wanting to do more yoga, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So yeah. It's so funny you mentioned the menstrual phase when, you know, you'd have more rest, but also more intuition. And
yep.
That seems real for me. I've noticed that for myself. That's interesting. I never connected it to my period, though.
Yeah. Yep. It is.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And it's so powerful. Like when we are really, I now love getting my period. And we're taught to not love it so that we don't connect with our intuition. Mm-hmm. Like, do you see how sneaky that is?
I do see. So, Sarah, I love what you say, but I've been thinking lately that we often blame men and say men keep women down, but I've been noticing lately that oftentimes it's women who keep women down. So when did we lose that connection to the earth?
So from my Western, I can tell this from my Western European lineage. So this happened, and I know that different versions of this happened all over the world, but I'm going to talk about what happened in Europe. And I also think it's important to know the story because it was this direct line that then colonized the United States, which is where I'm assuming most of your listeners are. So that's why this story is important.
Okay.
So it's important to remember that before we organized into cities in Western Europe, we lived in groups of people, in tribes. And in these groups of people, we have evidence that the origin story was that the mother goddess chose a male consort and had a baby, which was the earth. And so baked into the culture was this reverence of the earth. And it was also our survival, right? Because we didn't have factories and all this stuff. So all of the stories, all this reverence was about being in right relationship with the earth, hunting the animals. This beautiful woman, Starhawk, who wrote this book called Spiral Dance, it's a really beautiful book. She talks about how the shamans of the tribes would call the deer and the buffalo into the pits spiritually, and the buffalo would sacrifice themselves. So magic was worked into daily life. And women who were healers and midwives and herbalists, seers, truth tellers were really honored. And then what happened was, is that we started organizing into cities. And with this came the rise of Christianity. So, but what would happen is people would often leave and go to the foothills and seek out the wise women. And the word witch just comes from the word wise one. Mm. And so there was this still this sort of mixing for a while. And then to really oversimplify things, the people in power decided that, well, first of all, the Bible was rewritten at one point. So the Bible that we're reading now was not written during Jesus' time. It was written later. Mm-hmm. And so what was written into the Bible were these two really important characters, the Virgin Mary, virgin now meaning never had sex, instead of the original definition of the word virgin, which was a woman unto herself, which just meant a woman who was not married, who had her own power, who was basically allowed to do whatever she wanted. And she was spiritually like unto herself. That's the definition of the word virgin. So we changed her to be chaste. And then Mary Magdalene, instead of being Jesus's lover and his consort, so we see the union between Jesus and Mary Magdalene, his lover, where when they come together, they represent love, which is God. We made her a whore. So now there's no powerful females in the Bible. And this then came at the same time that there was this huge campaign against women who were healers. And because there was this inability to basically keep everyone in line and to have everyone do things the right way and to be good workers to support the few people in power. So this is what started the burning times. And so between 1400 and 1600, they're now saying that 9 million, mostly women, were brutally murdered and tortured.
Wow.
Jeez. And so during this time, in order for a woman to save herself, she had to turn in another woman. Wow. And so there's a lot of people believe that this is the origin of women being against each other.
Oh.
Is because we're pitted against each other during this time. And we have this like collective consciousness, this collective wound that we are obviously in the process of healing.
And when were the years when that happened, the 9 million?
Around 1400 to 1600.
Wow.
In Europe. This was all in Europe.
Okay.
And that's where all the numbers. And then, of course, we had, you know, the seven witches that were hung in Salem, mm-hmm. you know, right here, 45 minutes from where I'm sitting right now. But that mindset that some people were less than other people, you know, that is rampant. This is just one example of mm-hmm. it, specifically towards women. And then, you know, right around the same time, we know that that's when Christopher Columbus came to the Americas and the mass genocide of the Native Americans was going on at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so it's so important for us to see all these patterns of people in power wanting to keep people in line and keep us down. And so that's why it's so important for us to understand the history and understand these stories and how a lot of these stories and rituals were either erased or made to be scary And where, like, for example, I believe one of the most empowering things we can do as women is to reclaim our witchiness, which is just to reclaim our connection with the earth and the connection with the moon and our cycle. And to say, a witch isn't an evil, warty woman who's trying to make everybody miserable. A witch is an empowered woman.
Wow.
And like, how great is that?
And then that image of the warty woman, I bet it all just connects to it as well. Oh my gosh.
It is. Well, because we have to remember that people in power painted that story deliberately so that people wouldn't recognize the magic when it started to be birthed in us. Because we all, you know, like when we're a little girl, we all feel it, you know, when we're like digging up in the yard and wandering around, like we can feel the magic. We watch fairy tales on the TV or we read a book and we know it's real.
Yeah.
And then we start getting symbols of magic is evil. Magic is bad. That's not real. That's fake. And so then we can't find the magic anymore. Hmm. Or we say, oh, I'm so wrong. You know, I'm a bad person. I don't belong in this. You know, I can't. My parents can never find out. I feel like the black sheep. I'm a bad Christian. I'm a bad Jew, like whatever it is. And but we have to remember that we all have that. That's just like part of being human.
Tell us more about what you mean by the word magic. Like throughout the interview, I was believing you meant like connection to the divine, intuition, knowing things at a, you know, a heart level.
Yeah.
But what else does that mean for you?
Well, that, yes. And I mean, it's so many things. It's also, there's a language that is not heard or seen that I believe is spoken through the heart. So for me, I'm learning the language of the trees that I live with and the animals that are on my land. And I don't necessarily hear it as voices, but I can feel it as feelings. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I can feel what the sort of vibe, what's the vibe that's happening right now?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's also, for me, a big part of magic is calling in what I want, like this house. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a lot of different ways to look at it. And there is so much science that backs magic, which mm-hmm. is so cool. You know, like if you write down what you really want, what it really is just doing is priming your brain to see it when it shows up.
Ah, yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, but like how cool that we can even do that in our bodies. Like that seems magic. You know, just having a baby is magic to me. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's things like if I say, okay, I really want to make this amount of money in the next 3 months, I will write it down on a piece of paper and sit and meditate on it and burn it and, you know, maybe do like something else. And then usually I make that much money in 3 months.
Yeah. So it's energy.
It's so handy. It's energy.
Yeah. I get it. I love this. I'm a little stuck on back with these, you know, the patriarchy of the 1400 to 1600. What were women going to do with this magic that or this connection to energy that was so damaging or threatening to them? I'm not understanding what the fear was, you know?
Yeah. Well, it was really about how can you get everyone to think the same?
Oh, yeah.
So if they wanted everyone to think the same way, and that was about following the church. Mm-hmm. Because the church was the governmental power.
Gotcha.
And so if everyone believed in Jesus, then they could tell everyone what to do and how to do it. Mm. But if everyone was believing in different things, then they, these few people in power, wouldn't be able to tell everyone what to do all the time.
Gotcha.
Also, there's a lot of stories about how doctors didn't like the competition.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so they wanted the money. And so it's like they couldn't have all these healers. And we still see this today in our FDA not approving certain natural herbs that are so effective for us.
Yeah.
So we're still seeing this. And so this is why Jonathan and I feel like it's so healing for us to be married, like for the collective, for like the witch and the doctor to be working all of our stuff out. So it's been, I think it's so multi-layered, but it really goes back to how do you get an entire population of people to fall in line?
And that's changing now. I recently interviewed Carol Tuttle. Mm-hmm. And she said these institutions of religion, not just maybe the Catholic Church or Christianity, but these institutions are slowly stepping back in their position to support the one-on-one connection between human and the divine and becoming a structure that supports rather than controlling from the top down. And I like that. How do you see that happening? And how do you think we as women can help, you know, make that happen for our planet?
Yes. Well, it's so important because you can so see how when we create a system that there's an old white guy in the sky that's telling us what to do and how to be and judging us about what we're doing and like determining our future, we can see how that gives permission to other white men to do the same to mm-hmm. us. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's so deeply important for us to know that we have a direct connection with Source because it gives our power back to us. And it brings it to like, I am here to do my work. I am here to be me. I am the person who's in charge of myself. And when we do that, I mean, I believe we free up our own soul contract and our own potential to go do really great work during this lifetime. And I think it has to start with that coming back.
Beautiful. I love it.
Well, you know, I think that what's so important for women to understand is that is to start noticing where am I following the rules instead of following my own inner knowing. Mm-hmm. So that's the work. So the work is to say, where am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing versus what I know I am meant to do? And so that's why I created my program, Whole Woman, where we talk about all these things, talk about the patriarchy, talk about the moon, talk about magic, but it all comes back to how can you come back to your soul's directions instead of cultural directions or family directions or directions from your partner or what you feel like you're supposed to be doing because you're a mom. Because there's all of these rules and one size fits all solution to happiness. Like the biggest one is, oh, once you have a few kids and a cute husband and a house, you'll be so happy. And so what happens is that we get those things and we look around and we're like, fuck, I'm not happy.
Yeah.
I must be a terrible person and I feel so guilty and I'm not going to talk about it and I'm going to shut down and I'm not going to say what I actually mean and I'm such a bad person. And you can see how that keeps us pliant as women, that keeps us playing small. And because if we're constantly feeling bad about ourselves because we're not like happy just because we've had kids, then we're going to be like, really easily bossed around. Mm-hmm. So it's important to know that our definition of happiness is going to be as unique as our fingerprint. And yeah, having kids is such a blessing. And maybe there's other things for you to have too. And they're not in competition with being in motherhood, but you're a whole person that you can be such a great mom and so fulfilled in your own work and so fulfilled in your relationship and have a great sex life and wonderful friends and have all the money you could ever need and feel like you're really making an impact. And you can have all those things.
Mm-hmm. So what's the first step?
Well, I think the first step is recognizing where you're following the rules. And I really believe in getting into community. So I know you have a great membership program. I have a great membership program. Kate Northrup has a great membership program. You know, they all sort of come from different lenses, but find a community that where you're around other women who are also committed to being themselves. Because oftentimes in our normal communities, everybody else is trying to blend in and be perfect and be nice. And so it's so scary and uncomfortable for us to start to be wild. Mm-hmm. But if you get into a community where the women are saying like, I am more wolf than woman some days. Mm-hmm. And that just means like, I'm here to be my own wild self. And that's going to look different for everybody. Mm-hmm. But when we're in those communities, we then can start to hear who we are and start to stand up for who we are and be that person in our daily life. And, you know, my community is closed right now, but I'm happy to open it to you guys. If you just go to wholewoman.me/secret, there's like a little secret back door that you guys can just check it out.
Cool.
And we're doing some really great, wild work in there.
Yeah.
So recognize the rules and find a community. And, you know, I just really think like the whole reason we're here is to know who we are and then to be that person mm-hmm. in our daily life. That's mm-hmm. it.
That's awesome. One last question. Well, two. Sarah, what does your morning routine look like? I have to ask because when I speak to you, and I've said this to other guests before, but often even across the microphone and between thousands of miles between us or hundreds, I don't know how far it is to Medfield.
Yeah, Medfield. Yeah.
But I feel your juiciness. I feel your feminine power. I feel it right now. And I know many listening will feel that. So what are you doing on the daily that helps you bring that power into your life?
So it doesn't always happen in the morning, but sometime during the day, I just have this simple practice of lighting incense and a candle and dancing.
Okay.
Just like moving my body. And right now, that's about it because I have a 7-month-old baby and I never know when she's going to wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
But sometimes she'll come with me and we'll dance, you know, we'll dance together. But I find that also my whole life just has these little sacred touch points. So usually sometime during the day, I'll sit at my altar, I'll go outside and just tune into the trees. But I'd say, and I pull cards a lot, but mostly it's just canned incense, dance for 5 minutes. That's my minimum.
Beautiful. And finally, what does it mean for you, Sarah, to be a vibrant, happy woman?
For me, it is knowing who I am and being me in my daily life, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Exactly what I aim to do. I love it.
Oh, great.
Sarah, I'm so honored. If people want to know more about you or Hawthorne Farm and the things you're doing there, which seem amazing, I wish I lived near you.
Thanks. I know, me too.
Where could they find you?
You can go to sarahjenks.com.
Okay.
And there's a tab on there that says events at Hawthorne Farm, if anyone's in the area. And then you can also go to wholewoman.me/secret to get the juice. My membership program.
Yes. Yeah. Beautiful. Well, I appreciate you being on the show, Sarah. I loved every minute. Thank you so much. Aww,
thanks for having me, Jen. This was such a joy.
Take care.
You too.
So there you have it, Sarah Jenks, and so many amazing thoughts on earth and nature and cycles and seasons. Really, I think it's a deep, deep form of mindfulness where we're very attuned to how we're feeling energetically in our bodies as we cycle, how we're feeling as the earth cycles around the sun, and really being in touch with energy. And I've been really intrigued with thoughts of energy lately. I learned about masculine and feminine more deeply when I was at a Tony Robbins event recently. And I've been thinking a lot about that kind of energy. And I'm excited to add a focus on seasonal energy and connection to nature. I think that's missing for so many of us. I think it's also beautiful what she talked about in regards to our bodies, giving ourselves what we really need. Instead of grabbing that cookie, we go for the therapy. Instead of grabbing that candy, we go for the actual love and connection with the people around us. So I want to challenge you to think about what do you really need and how can you fill it in healthier ways? And how can you pay more attention to the seasons and the cycles of your body and to your magic within you, which you've heard me talk about often on this show as your intuition, connection to God or a higher power or what Sarah called source. That inner connection is what helps us tap into our true authentic self. It's what helps us to feel truly empowered and to take our power back so that we're not relying on the external world, on everyone else's shoulds and expectations to tell us what we need to be doing with our lives. But instead, we know intuitively at the heart level what we need to be doing with our lives. When we need to rest, when we need to slow down and listen to intuition and to follow those natural ups and downs of our cycles, of our seasons, of our planet. So beautiful. And I hope you'll add a bit of that into your lives and feel the joy that will come with it as you shift. Well, I thank you so much for listening. I will be back again next week talking with another Sarah, our third Sarah in a row, Sarah Jean Gilbert, a dear friend of mine who is a member of Heal Your Heart and the Vibrant Happy Women Club. I'm so grateful that she has agreed to come talk with us. So that will be next week. And all of you listeners who are going to the Vibrant Happy Women Retreat, can you believe that is next week? Oh my goodness. Those of you who are not going, think ahead 2020 so you can join us. It will be about the same time. It will be happening in February of 2020. Just put it in your mind. Maybe mark it on your calendar. You'll want to be there. I am so excited. Everyone who's making it to the Vibrant Happy Women Retreat 2019, I will see you in Florida next week. Holy cow. I cannot wait. Everyone, thank you so much for listening, for being a part of this movement to listen to our hearts and be our most authentic, loving selves. And I will see you next time. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Vibrant Happy Women podcast at www.jenride.com.